Hi, I'm Gary Oldman, actor. Some of you may know me from such films as Dracula, Air Force One, and Kung Fu Panda 2. Now, just as a professional basketball player spends hours on the court mastering every aspect of his game, I, Gary Oldman, studied acting for many years to perfect my craft. And just as I, Gary Oldman, actor, would never try and join an NBA team just because I'm famous, I, Gary Oldman, would very much appreciate it if professional basketball players would stay the out of movies! Who the hell told you you could act? But the director on your Powerade commercial? You're not actors! Some of you can't even speak English! You suck! Get it? You suck!
Hey, see how I did that? That's called acting. Do you feel the emotion? I can do that. You can.
Radio Draw.
It's another Thursday night. I am Josh Hadley. I am not an actor, but I pretend to be one. So does that make me act like I'm an actor? I don't know. Cecil, chime in.
Acting.
All right. He's seen Saturday Night Live. Peter, what about you?
I have come here to chew ass and kick bubblegum.
Okay. For that, Adam and Eve.
If you go to adamandeve.com and you use the promo code DROME, you can get yourself some free stuff, some perks. You can get a mystery gift. You can get a gift for him, a gift for her, 6 free DVDs. And as I mentioned earlier, free shipping. That's only to the U.S. by using the promo code DROME on adamandeve.com.
Exactly. We're going to be talking about non-actors tonight in movies. Now, when I say non-actors, obviously if they're in a movie, they're acting to a degree. By non-actors, what I mean is people who are not known as actors, whose primary profession is not actors, like people who are a musician that maybe then made a movie, or a wrestler, or a politician, or some such. So when I say non-actors, that's what I mean. I'm not meaning it as an insult. I'm meaning it as these people were not actors by trade. And the reason we want to talk about this, Peter pitched this episode a while ago, and it just has been on the back burner. With the relatively young death of Roderick George Toombs, a.k.a. Rowdy Roddy Piper, I think this is as good of a time as any to touch on Peter's idea. Peter, why did you want to talk about non-actors, even though we backdoored it a little bit?
Because I think it's an interesting topic where you have people that aren't classically trained actors that have a natural charisma. Like, you've got wrestlers like Roddy Piper, who transitioned very well to the big screen. You've got Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was primarily a bodybuilder, who managed to transition onto the big screen, and not so much using acting talent, but using a, like I said, a natural charisma, something magnetic about him on screen that just seems to work. And I think it's there's a lot of people that ended up in movies that were different things. Like we just mentioned Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the basketball player.
Actually, that was in pre-show, so they didn't hear that.
Well, they didn't. Yeah, we were just talking about it. You got also other wrestlers like Jesse Ventura, and it's still going nowadays with it's questionable whether he's actually entertaining as an actor or not, but you got guys like John Cena in movie. A lot of wrestlers that become actors, but you've also got from other professions, of course, with Schwarzenegger, like bodybuilders, you got basketball players, all sorts of walks of life that either really work well on the screen, and some are just hilariously bad. And I think it's just a fun topic.
Well, basketball players, Gary Oldman has a little bit to say about that, but do you usually get a little apprehensive when you hear, like, maybe an action movie is starring a wrestler or starring a musician? Who the hell would have ever thought Ice-T would have been that damn good in New Jack City?
Seriously. He's kind of the exception to the rule, because for the most part, the vast majority of hip hop guys that get into movies are horrible.
Yeah.
I like Ice-T is the exception of the rule. But whenever I'm watching a movie, like and Ludacris shows up or something, I'm like, oh, Christ. Like, this is just going to be awful.
There's one exception when it comes to the rap guys. And this is going to sound racist, and I don't mean it to. Whenever they're on, like, a Law & Order or Oz or something, they're almost always playing Gang Members. And I buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's racist or not.
A lot of them in television shows, they play Gang Members or they play rappers because, you know, that's a big stretch. But a lot of times in movies, I see them and they more often than not will play cops or they'll play like a gangster, but really they're an undercover cop. And it's just like, oh, Christ, you know. But if there's an action...
Wasn't it DMX that was with Seagal in Exit Wounds?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that was
yes,
DMX.
Yes, it was DMX. DMX just yelling his way through everything. and then they followed it up. The other rapper, the guy that mumbles through everything. Hold on one second. Let me just...
We're very knowledgeable.
I'm borderline.
We're all white.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay, yeah, here we go. Half Past Dead. Ja Rule.
Yes, from Half Past Dead.
He did Half Past Dead with Ja Rule, and every scene Ja Rule was in, he had to do the, like, he's looking down, and he's kind of looking up, and he's like, hey, we're going to be living it up. And it's like, oh, stop it.
Well, like,
but on the flip side, honestly, when there's an action movie and there's like a sports guy in it or something, usually the majority of the time I like it. You know, I mean, I thought the Marine was not a good movie, but I thought that John Cena was at least trying in it. I freaking love Stone Cold with Brian Bosworth. I love the majority of the Roddy Piper stuff. So it's like sports guys. Like The Rock has been in a lot of, like, The Rock's like a legitimately good actor now.
Oh, hell yeah. The Rock is, his 2.5 minutes in Reno 911, the movie, is only watchable scene in that whole train wreck.
That is so fucking
funny.
He
stole that movie in 2 minutes. But, you've got, like Rowdy Roddy Piper. I'm going to not count the wrestling stuff, like WrestleMania or appearing on a TV show as Rowdy Roddy Piper, like he did on, like, Silver Spoons and stuff like that. I'm not going to count those because he's playing himself. Mm-hmm. But, like, Rowdy Roddy Piper, there's the unaired TV pilot Body Slam, which nobody saw because it never aired. I think
I reviewed that. I have a video of that.
It didn't air in 1986, I meant. That didn't leak out till later. A lot of people think his first movie was Hell Comes to Frogtown. And it's like, well, there's also the 2-hour pilot to the Sam Jones, Glenn Larson TV series, The Highwayman, which was his first real acting role. Now, first of all, I want to talk about The Highwayman a little bit. The two-hour TV movie pilot, look at this cast. Sam Jones, Claudia Christian, G. Gordon Liddy, Michael Berryman, Bashacrombie Richmond, Jimmy Smits, Lyle Alzado, Wings Hauser, and fucking Rowdy Roddy Piper.
That is awesome.
I love Claudia Christian.
This show lasted 8 episodes and was gone.
Wow.
And then, of course, you know, he went on to Hell Comes to Frogtown, and then, of course, They Live, which is really what cemented him. He had... I think it was Cecil that used the word, a natural charisma to him. He always felt...
That.
Okay, it was Peter that said it. I'm sorry. Rowdy Roddy Piper did have this kind of everyman charisma. Whereas then you get the stiff people, like, you know what? I think Jesse Ventura is awesome, but he was stiff as hell in Predator. He was stiff as hell in, like, Abraxas and that. He looked uncomfortable in front of the camera at times.
He still works, though. He has a weird sort of... there's an idiosyncrasy to him that just kind of works. Like, even, like, just his weird camera presence kind of worked for Abraxas because it was kind of a weird character that had this, like, stilted way of speaking.
He was still better than Svenelly Thorsen in that.
Oh, yeah. The golden...
But then you also have other walks of life as well that leech into movies, like political figures. I mentioned G. Gordon Liddy there in The Highwayman. G. Gordon Liddy has also been villains on Airwolf, Miami Vice, The Adventures of Bean Baxter, MacGyver, Superforce, Midnight Caller, 18 Wheels of Justice, and those are only the ones where he's playing a fictional character. He's also on shows like Late Line and whatnot where he plays G. Gordon Liddy.
Oh, wow.
You know, you've got lots of political figures that play themselves or versions of themselves in a lot of things as well, which I think is a little more dangerous. I worked on that movie with Eric Roberts, Project Solitude. Well, that was shot in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Green Bay's mayor, Jim Schmidt, is in the movie as a convicted three-time murderer.
Oh, shit.
You just kind of go, well, did you choose that role, Mayor Schmidt, or was that just the cameo that you were offered? I don't know. So do you think, like, when a political figure is in a fictional piece, obviously after they're a political figure, because we have lots of examples of people that later on go to, like, Jesse Ventura and that to become political figures. But do you think, like John Kerry appearing on Late Line and whatnot as himself is really a wise move when they do that kind of thing?
I don't know. I mean, because sometimes it kind of humanizes them a little bit. You're like, all right, well, because most people don't really know a lot of the politicians outside of, like, their constant just BS. And sometimes if you see them in a movie where they're playing themselves or something, or maybe poking fun at themselves a little bit, then it's kind of interesting. But I would say, although most times it's probably better to just not.
It can be, like Cecil was saying, sometimes it can really humanize them, where it's like they seem very stuck up when you see them in interviews and in press conferences and stuff like that. And
especially if they're willing to make fun of themselves.
Yeah, and then you see them in a movie or a TV spot or something where they're kind of kicking themselves a bit and doing a little bit of self-deprecating humor or being a bit silly, and then you realize that there's actually a human behind that suit. So it's kind of nice to see that, but sometimes it can be very try-hardy, and they just kind of come across as cringy. Like now Donald Trump is going into politics, and just in general, every time that guy opens his mouth, like, oh, fucking Christ, you just get a chill, because it just whatever he's going to say is going to be the stupidest shit ever.
But then you also have, like, musicians. We mentioned rappers, but you get a lot of musicians that are in movies and TV. Like, for one thing, Miami Vice, probably due to the fact that it had such a close association with music to begin with, had so many rock stars appear on the show. I remember Ted Nugent was an assassin in an episode. Phil Collins played two different characters. James Brown was literally an alien on Miami Vice. Glenn Frey really acting his ass off, too, in Smuggler's Blues. And you had a bunch of other cameos. I mean, hell, just sometimes the band as themselves. I know, Peter, you're a big Miami Vice fan. Remember the episode where Suicidal Tendencies played Institutionalized in a bar scene with Crockett and Tubbs? Do you remember that?
It's just one of the many reasons why Miami Vice is one of the greatest shows ever.
You get the musicians that come in. They usually, I don't know, they're usually not that bad. And sometimes they have a cameo that's essentially themselves. Have either of you guys seen Tommy Chong's 1990 movie Far Out Man?
I have not.
Isn't that the one with Dennis Hopper? Or no, with Kiefer Sutherland.
No.
Right? No?
No, you're thinking of Flashback.
Oh, okay.
No, Far Out Man.
Because they came out right about the same time.
The entire opening is Ray Don Chong taking Martin Mull to Tommy Chong's house, and he's an old musician. He's an old burned-out hippie musician. And there's just all this heavy metal playing. Their characters are yelling over one another, and he goes, "Hang on, let me turn the stereo down. Guys, shut up!" And it's Dokken, the band, playing in his living room. And, like, that kind of cameo is hilarious. And they don't really have to act, you know?
Well, some of them have been really genuinely great on screen. Like, Tom Waits in Down by Law is fantastic. And then, of course, you've got the ones that are kind of, they're admittedly so bad that they end up being amazing, like really anything Henry Rollins is in. I think musicians.
See, I think,
like,
no, I'm gonna stop you because I'm gonna argue with you. Henry Rollins, I think, is really good in some parts. He constantly is self-deprecating about how bad of an actor he really is. You look at him in, like, Morgan's Ferry, he steals Johnny Mnemonic for the 20 minutes he's in it.
He's great in The Chase.
In The Chase, he's great. I mean, Henry Rollins is a much better actor then I think he gives himself credit for it. So I'll argue with the Henry Rollins thing.
Well, I think I do agree that he's very hard on himself, because I was going to say that he has a very, much like how guys like Roddy Piper and Arnold Schwarzenegger do, he has a very natural charisma about him, and it's almost like he doesn't really have to act, he just has to sort of be himself, I guess, and it just...
Oh, no, in Johnny Mnemonic, Spider was Henry Rollins in the cyberpunk future.
Yep.
I mean, he really was.
Yeah, he's awesome, and just it's the same thing, I guess, where if you have to perform, sometimes that can your charisma will come from that. So certain athletes will be like that, like Brian Bosworth and Lyle Alzado had a very natural charisma to them, and they were very watchable. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a bodybuilder, but he just had this awesome personality. Same with guys like Roddy Piper, or musicians like Tom Waits and Henry Rollins, who just have this. They have a cool factor, and it can really work when it comes to performing in on the screen and in front of the camera.
Well, the same thing with, like, when we did that whole episode on Terminal City Ricochet. Jello Biafra was fantastic in Terminal City Ricochet, wasn't he?
Yeah.
As a villain to boot.
As a corporate villain.
Well, the majority of the ones that I see are like Jeff Healey in like Roadhouse, where they're kind of just...
He wasn't bad in that, really.
Well, no, he wasn't bad, but he was just kind of playing Jeff Healey. I mean, granted, I know he's blind and all, so he couldn't really do a whole lot. I mean, you know, he wasn't going to get out there and start kicking ass. He was, you know...
If Tarantino made it, he would.
Yeah, that is very possible. But, I mean, he was good, you know, in that. But a lot of times, I just think of musicians usually, with the exception of, like, Rollins... Musicians usually show up in like a cameo, like Huey Lewis in Back to the Future, which I thought was awesome. He gets up there and he's playing Power of Love, and he basically tells him he's too loud. You know, it's like, all right.
You guys of all people have probably seen the Italian Alice Cooper monster flick, Monster Dog.
Not for a while, but yeah.
Alice Cooper is terrible in that. And he's the only reason I rented it. Like, Alice Cooper in a monster movie? Yeah. Well, this sucks.
I like Tom Petty in The Postman.
All right. So... Okay, you're finished. Peter?
That's all I thought.
Well, Kris Kristofferson is another example of a musician working really well as an actor. Like, he has a very badass vibe to him, especially in Blade and movies like that, and Payback, and of course the stuff that he's done, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. So some of them really do. They just have this natural coolness about him that translates so well onto the screen. I don't know if it's a natural thing or if it's developed from just being able to perform in front of large audiences of people, so this just larger than life personality develops, and they can kind of do a little bit of everything.
Well, and sometimes I do think that comes from the performing, and sometimes it comes from a I don't give a f- attitude.
Yeah,
especially if the part calls for it. Like, have you guys seen the 1984 Italian flick Corrupt, also known as Bad Lieutenant 2, Bad Cop, Corrupt Cop, and whatnot, with Harvey Keitel and John Lydon of the Sex Pistols?
I have not, but it's on my list.
Nope.
Wow. Okay. I figured you guys might have. John Lydon plays a serial killer in that. And of course, Harvey Keitel is a corrupt police officer, because what the hell else does Harvey Keitel ever play? John Lydon is a serial killer in that, who may not actually be a serial killer. And he is absolutely chilling in this. I mean, he steals this movie from Harvey Keitel.
Wow.
And it's like, holy crap. And it's this movie that is like, it's so obscure. You guys haven't seen it, and you guys are trash film aficionados. Nobody knows this movie. It's almost impossible even to find background on this movie. Seriously, yeah. You can't find any background on this movie at all. It's like this movie just existed, and that's it. The performance that Lydon gives is this sort of, I don't care what my performance is, and yet it totally fits the character he's playing. So I don't know if he's actually acting really well or acting so badly it benefits the film. And I think that's good when you can't tell. There's one other big aspect. Now, I'm going to get some crap from people over this, and I don't mean to, but it's a different kind of acting. Porno actors, porn actors and actresses, when they go from porn, yes, that is acting, into what we would consider mainstream films, there's a very large transition of those who, let's face it, can't act. For every Ashlyn Gere for every Ginger Lynn Allen, you get a Tracy Lords. You get a lot of these really terrible, terrible porn actors that do not know how to deliver a line of dialogue and have no screen performance.
That's fine. I mean, it's become a lot more acceptable nowadays, where you have porn actresses that are going from, you know, porn into movies that normally they wouldn't be doing. So back in, like, when you had Ginger Lynn, you know, going from porn and going into, you know, movies and stuff, it was such a weird thing. And now you have somebody like Sasha Gray, who just does it like, you know, like it's nothing. And she's been in a couple of fairly larger profile movies.
Isn't she in one of the Piranha movies, the first one, or was it the second one?
I know there was some kind of porn star in Piranha, but I can't remember if it was her.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was Sasha Gray or not, but...
No, it wasn't Sasha Gray. It was some other porn star that was in it. She was in that... man, my brain is not on it tonight. She's been in a couple of movies that were surprisingly... Like The Girlfriend Experience. She was in that. She was in that movie with Frodo. That was actually pretty decent. Porn actresses... In general, getting to... that's what I wanted to say. I don't think Tracy Lords is all that bad.
Tracy Lords is horrendous.
I know you don't like her, but...
No, I'm putting my dislike of her personally aside. She is a terrible actress.
Dude, I liked in, like, Not of This Earth and Shock 'Em Dead and, like... I mean, she's been in, like, some cornball, like, low-budget movies, but I've always thought that she did a... You know, she did a good... you know, job for what the movie required. I mean, you know, she's not going to win any Oscars, but I've seen far, far worse from actors and actresses that are actually, like, legitimately actors. You know, they
she's
didn't come
as bad
up
as Sam Worthington and Jai Courtney.
Ooh, that's tough. No, she's got more chemistry than the Sam Worthington is just, he is really bland. I mean, but even him, I've seen movies where the movie was good and he, like, they really did their best to make him as good as he could be.
That's one of the things I'm worried about Suicide Squad, the fact that Jai Courtney is one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm. Jai Courtney, how is that guy, that guy's agent has to be the greatest agent ever.
I said the same thing about Sam Worthington. This guy has not acted in 8 films. I mean, he's been in 8 films, and he hasn't acted in a single one, and yet he's an A-list movie star for some reason.
Yeah, and these aren't like small budget films. These are massive, monumental franchises. Terrible in almost everything that I've seen him in, and annoying.
You know, but I think Tracy Lords is just horrendous. I think she is terrible. She's a terrible, terrible actress. But then you look at, like, Ginger Lynn Allen. Have either of you guys seen her first mainstream film, Hollywood Boulevard 2, the Roger Corman movie?
No.
No, I've seen a lot. Not of This Earth? No, we're going on
Ginger
Lynn.
Not of This Earth is Tracy Lords. I'm talking Ginger Lynn.
Yeah, I know. I transitioned there for a second. And I like Not of This Earth. But, no.
She's really, really good in that. And her big break, I think this was right after the first Vice Academy movie. When she was on NYPD Blue, it was like the third episode. She was really early into NYPD Blue. She almost stole from Dennis Franz. She was damn good on NYPD Blue. And then because of the fact that she hates Tracy Lords on a personal level, Tracy Lords was up for that same role. And I'm like, seeing Ginger Lynn's performance in that NYPD Blue and knowing that that was almost Tracy Lords, no way Tracy Lords would have sold that role half as much as Ginger Lynn did. You've got Ashlyn Gere. Ashlyn Gere is the exception to all of the rules. Because, see, usually, especially in porn, there is the general rule, you do porn, then you move to mainstream. But usually you do not get the mainstream roles while you're still doing porn. Ashlyn Gere was able to do that. She'd be like on the X-Files and then leave the set from that and go do Cocksmokers 37. Then she'd go do a Space Above and Beyond episode for Fox. Then she'd be on I wanna butt bang a MILF number 19. Then she would go and work on like The One and Final Destination, and then she'd go and do a porno. She's one of the few that was able to balance both of those worlds simultaneously. And she was a good actress. Yeah. It's like if you just saw her on Space Above and Beyond or the X-Files or whatnot, you'd never go, you mean she takes cock up the ass for her main living?
I think it can be more miss than hit, usually, just I guess because it's so hard for them to transition into it and be taken seriously. But some of them really do go at it and go well and are well received. I'm not a particularly big fan of Sasha Gray's acting, but I have seen her in stuff, and I think it is really cool that she was able to make that transition and become more of a like you know, she didn't want to do porn anymore. She wanted to do other acting, and she was a big part of Entourage for a while. She did that Girlfriend Experience movie, and then there's that James Dean dude who I think is still doing porn, but was actually really good in the Bret Easton Ellis Canyons movie, and I honestly feel like he would be better as like an actual actor than like to me he's like
come on when Peter when you got a cock that big you don't waste it not showing it.
He's honestly I think he's too good looking of a dude. Like he looks like a real actor and should be in real movies. Like I feel like he's really being wasted in porn. But I mean I guess he likes to do it, so that's his choice. But I would really like to see the guy in more movies because he was easily the best part of the Canyons.
But then the other angle is there's a weird stigma to hiring a porn actor or an actress. You don't get the weird stigma when Ted Nugent is on Miami Vice. You do have a weird stigma when Ginger Lynn Allen is on NYPD Blue. She's talked about that. Like even when you come on set, the vibe is different because they know you came from that world. Legs McDaniel made a great documentary about porn that had the perfect title for this, The Secrets of the Other Hollywood. These are two different worlds, and they tend to not cross over as much as people would like to think that they do. What happens when a musician or a wrestler or somebody makes that transition and they become more famous for their movies than for their music? Like, I would say, in all honesty, more people probably, I'm just talking, you know, your general person out there, probably knows Debbie Harry more as an actress than they do Blondie the band. I would argue that Debbie Harry is more famous for Videodrome and all of the movies she's been in than she is for her songs.
I could see that.
I don't agree with that.
For people who maybe don't listen to her music and were introduced to her through her movies, it would be kind of easy to go, oh, really? Wow, she's a musician? Because she's good. She's good at both of the things she does. And with, I think a lot of people know Henry Rollins more as an actor than they do as a musician. Like a lot of people I talk to are surprised that he does spoken word and was in Black Flag and has Rollins Band and stuff. Because a lot of people nowadays, especially that I talk to at work, know him as the white supremacist from Sons of Anarchy. And I'm like, oh,
he was so brutal in that too.
Yeah.
Damn. Although his death was awesome.
Yeah. So it's like, I talk to people and I'm like, oh, well, do you listen to Black Flag or his spoken word? And they're like, he's a musician. I'm like, yeah, he's an awesome punk dude. You should check out his music. And it's like people are happy to hear about that because they like him as an actor. So then they want to go and check out the music, too. And I think there are some where their presence on screen is so strong that people forget that they were musicians or athletes or whatever. Like Brian Bosworth in movies, he had such an awesome presence as an action star. Kris Kristofferson really transitioned into movies. So it can happen that way, I think, where even if you listen to their music, you kind of see them more as an actor. Or there are a lot of people that just get introduced to them through their movies, and it kind of works out that way.
Cecil, why did you disagree with me about Debbie Harry?
No, I think that Debbie Harry's music as Blondie was a lot farther reaching than her acting was. I mean,
In the 70s, yes. But I think today, she's not making music anymore. More people know her from on all the TV shows she appears on than maybe hearing Heart of Glass on the radio, you know?
I don't know. I think that all the music and stuff that she's done, there are a lot, like those songs are enormous, and they're still enormous. So I think that they kind of are bigger. I mean, there are probably some people that maybe don't know that Debbie Harry and Blondie are the same person or, you know, the band, but you know what I'm talking about.
Where's Dagwood?
Right. Oh, God. You know, There's very, very small people that would get that nowadays.
What about when you have real people that show up? And I'm not talking like reality TV stars, but like talk show hosts or newscasters or whatnot showing up in a movie. Does that add an air of realism to the movie or take away some of the reality of the newscaster? Like, remember that NBC show from the early 2000s, Fathom?
Not really.
No.
It was one of the, hey, Lost is really popular, we need something like Lost. You know, it was one of the movies that came in the wake of that. It lasted for 13 episodes. NBC is owned by Universal, which obviously owns, you know, NBC News and whatnot. The sea levels are rising and sea monsters are coming up. And almost every episode had actual NBC or MSNBC news personalities playing themselves, broadcasting the news about the Earth changing and giant monsters. Does that make it better or worse than when you go to watch the news and you're like, yeah, that guy was just talking about giant monsters on that TV show. Now I'm supposed to believe him about the Bosnian situation?
Do you mean Surface?
Did I say... Okay, Fathom was the Fathom. Comic book. Fathom's the comic book. Surface, yes.
Okay, sorry. All right.
The one with Lake Bell.
The one with Lake Bell, yeah, that was Surface. Yeah,
okay,
yes, I
said
I did
the
watch.
Wrong thing.
Yes, I did. Yeah, boy, we're all f***ed up today. yes, I did watch Surface. I actually really enjoyed Surface.
So you know what I'm talking about
It
was chocked full of actual NBC and MSNBC news personalities.
Well,
on it.
The thing was, though, that for like meant zero on me because I don't watch the news and I don't watch any of that junk. So they had all these news people and I had no idea until you said it now, I had no idea.
You didn't know they weren't actors, huh?
I didn't know they weren't actors. I thought that they were just like, you know, because you can get anybody to do a newscaster.
Even like that Land of the Lost rape film. You had Matt Lauer as a main character. That film was a rape to the show.
You should have seen all the newscasters and whatnot. Pretty much the entire cast of the Today Show was in Sharknado 2. Al Roker and you know all those other. Oh, we got sharks coming in. Oh, geez.
Not news, but so much like a talk show. Look at like Martin Downey Jr. You tell me. He was not fantastic in Predator 2, and he didn't steal Revenge of the Nerds 3 away from the actual nerds.
Yeah, that guy, he was awesome. As what did he play? Predator 2, he was Tony Pope.
Tony Pope on Hardcore. And he was essentially playing himself. You guys might be too young to remember the Morton Downey Jr. show from the late 80s.
Hey, gang, getting a little bored with Oprah Phil and Johnny, huh? We'll try it. This time, we'll try it.
Wait, shut up and buy
you. You shut up. I'll insult everything but your intelligence.
He was basically playing Morton Downey Jr. in the future of 1997.
I remember watching him because he had Guar and the Mentors on. I was like, this is the greatest show on television because nobody at the time knew what Guar and Mentors were.
He also
had
an episode with Tony Timpone of Fangoria and Michael Berryman defending horror movies.
I used to like it because he was like, you know, whether or not it was trumped up or not, like he was.
It was. You watch any of the behind the scenes or read his book. It was all it was tabloid television.
I don't know. It seemed more genuine than the tabloid crap that we have now. But yeah, he would flip the hell out. I mean, he kind of screwed himself over with the whole carving a swastika into his forehead.
No, he drew it on with magic marker claiming he was attacked by neo-Nazis. So shortly after Geraldo was attacked by neo-Nazis on live television, he forgot that when he faked this, when he put the swastika on his face in the mirror,
he did
it
would
show up reversed. Oops. Career gone after that. But hey, Predator 2 and that was all after the fact. So remember that Tales from the Crypt episode where he was playing the sleazy TV newsman in that haunted house? One of the fucking scariest episodes of that show ever.
Well, Morton Downey Jr. I think is the only one I really know that was like a newscaster in trans. Like, for the longest time, I thought he was just some actor from Predator 2. And I always, I love that character. Because like Cecil, I don't really... I tend to kind of ignore the news because I just don't like watching it. I'm not fascinated by depressing events every day. So when I see newscasters in movies, I just figure that they either got them from some morning or late show, or it's like an actor that they got to play a newscaster. It's not something that I really think about too much.
Sometimes that can give the movie extra gravitas that they didn't intend. There's a fake broadcast movie from 1984 called Countdown to Looking Glass. It's all done as a series of fake newscasts. This is at the height of the Cold War, and it's about tensions between America and the USSR leading to nuclear war and the 8 days that lead up to this. And they had Newt Gingrich and Eric Severide and lots of actual American political figures and news figures playing themselves in a fake newscast. So if you missed the beginning that said it was fake, that lent an air of authenticity that made that made people think that this was a real newscast. So nice. Sometimes that can work too well.
When it comes to that and having a disclaimer like that, that's really showing how legitimate it can be if you're using a majority of the cast being the real newscasters and stuff like that. I think it's definitely a good idea and is awesome if the execution of it works. I haven't seen Countdown to Looking Glass yet, but I'm definitely going to check it out.
The last 5 minutes are chilling. I mean, maybe more so to me because I grew up in that era. And, you know, I was 9 when that shit was going down. You weren't born yet, so you might not have the same – it might not have the same impact on you that the Cold War stuff, when it's done that chillingly, does to me.
I guess it makes it feel more realistic. I really don't have a thing because I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I kind of just want to talk about Roddy Piper.
But no, Roddy Piper feeds into like the Blondie thing. Mm-hmm. He stopped being a wrestler for the longest time, and he was an actor. I know he's got one more movie that hasn't come out yet. Otherwise, the last thing he did before his death was playing himself in Saints Row 4. He became known far more for They Live, Hell Comes to Frogtown, and whatnot than he did for wrestling. I mean, we've grown up with an entire generation now. Kind of like what Peter said about Henry Rollins. He's a musician. People are like, Roddy Piper was a wrestler? Yeah. They know him from the movies.
Yeah, he's absolutely an action star from movies like They Live and Hell Comes to Frogtown and like the random direct-to-video stuff he did with like Billy Blanks. Like,
well, he really wishes people would forget about Immortal Kombat. He said that movie was hell to make and it's hell to watch.
It's it's hilarious though.
It is hilarious.
It's so bad. On Monster Vision, Joe Bob Briggs actually had a contest that the winner would get to pick one movie that they show constantly to never show again. Overwhelmingly, people picked Immortal Kombat. They're like, please stop showing this movie every 2 months.
But yeah, Roddy Piper as an actor really is like, to me, it's sort of the same thing with what I said about James Dean, where it almost seems like his personality and the presence he brings are a lot bigger than what he's actually doing. Like, Roddy Piper was a great wrestler. He was a very awesome ring technician, great on the mic, but he has a presence that to me is more that of an actor. He's a perfect action hero. He's a great everyman kind of character. And he's honestly, I think he's a really talented, underrated actor. Like I thought his episodes on Always Sunny in Philadelphia as the maniac were just so hilarious. It's so funny. Like his comedic timing is, I would call it brilliant. And at the same time, he's got that great physical presence. Like, to me, he's easily on tier with guys like Arnold. Like, that's the same level.
Do you know that he once beat up Morton Downey Jr.?
Really?
No, it was a whole Piper's Pit thing at one of the WrestleManias. Morton Downey Jr. was himself, and they got into a thing, and he beat him up. I'm not joking.
That was with the fire extinguisher when Morton Downey Jr. kept blowing smoke in his face.
Yes. So to tie those back together.
And he hit Cyndi Lauper in the back of the head with a painting or something.
Someone like Rowdy Roddy Piper, do you think it's right that the people coming up today are only going to know him from the movies? Or is that arguably the better legacy than being a wrestler.
I see, I'm one of those people that don't think that there's anything particularly wrong with the whole wrestling thing. I grew up with a lot of the old guard of the WWF, you know, with
Hulk
Hogan. I saw
no holds barred.
And yes, you chuck ass.
I smell Dookie!
Dookie! And, you know, Hulk Hogan, the Iron Sheik and all that. So I don't have any problem with them transitioning over from wrestling to acting, because basically a lot of wrestling is acting anyway. I guess I think what's more important is that people know who Roddy Piper is, because Roddy Piper is amazing. And like Peter said, he just is one of those guys who he just had a certain charisma about him. You just naturally liked the guy. Yeah, whether or not you knew him from acting, whether you knew him from movies or whatever, from wrestling, you just would see him and you'd be like, holy crap, this guy was made to be an entertainer. And so as long as people know him from something, I think that's the most important thing.
What about one of the stranger? Now, these tend to be cameos, but sometimes it's more. When an author makes the leap to being not writing an episode of a TV show or movie, but being on camera. For instance, like when Stephen King was on Sons of Anarchy, when William Gibson was on Wild Palms as William Gibson, Stephen King was playing, I think, the brilliantly in-joke-ish Bachman.
Yeah.
Which, you know, works. It's fine if you don't get it. If you get the joke, it works on two levels, though. And then there are others like Back to School. Kurt Vonnegut plays himself in a very self-deprecating role. And, you know, when you've got an author that appears in a film, I mean, Alan Moore has been in films. There's been certain comic book authors that have appeared on camera. Hell, Stan Lee in all of the Marvel movies. Is it weird when an author appears on camera? Is that an equally strange non-actor transition?
Well, I mean, I thought you would have mentioned Stephen King in Creepshow, because he had a much larger part in that than in
well,
most.
Well, because we talked about that when we did the Creepshow retrospectives.
Right. But, you know, what was the goddamn or what?
Meteor shit.
That's it. Meteor shit.
No, not there.
That was, yeah. He was actually really good in that. He played a good hick.
He's also really good in the Maximum Overdrive commercial.
Oh yeah. Scare the hell out of you.
Are you talking about that one where he's so high?
Hi. My name is Stephen King. I've written several motion pictures, but I want to tell you about a movie called Maximum Overdrive, which is the first one I've directed.
Wow! What in the dickens is going on around here?
A lot of people have directed Stephen King novels and stories, and I finally decided if you want something done right, you ought to do it yourself.
And who was driving it?
I don't know.
Curtis! It's coming after us!
It was my first picture as a director, and you know something? I sort of enjoyed it.
What is going on?
I don't know!
I just wanted someone to do Stephen King right.
You want a war? You got one.
I just want to get the hell out of here.
So come and spend some time with me and my friends at the Dixie Boy. Spend some time in the dark.
Please don't let me in the dark.
Help me.
I'm going to scare the hell out of you. And that's a promise.
You're going to get us in an awful lot of trouble, man.
We already in trouble.
Maximum terror.
Jesus coming and he is...
Maximum King.
Maybe tomorrow will be our world again.
Dino De Laurentiis presents Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive.
I mean, they do the close-up on his eyes, and you can see he's f***ing gone.
Yep.
He's so coked out of his damn mind in that ad.
Oh, my God. I love that so much. I love that trailer more than the movie.
This machine just called me an asshole.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's in the movie, too, the first, like, asshole. 5 minutes.
Well, he's in a whole bunch of his movies, you know, Alfred Hitchcock style with the mm-hmm. little pointless cameos.
He usually has, like, one or two lines, and, yeah. But Creepshow is probably the biggest of all of the, well, I mean, it wasn't a Stephen King movie. It was a, you know, but he
was in a lot of that Sons of Anarchy episode where he played Bachman.
If they can act, sure, why not? You know, it's no different than any other kind of artist who's getting in front of the camera. The majority of authors, though, that I've seen usually are just popping in as cameos. You know, they're sitting at a lunch counter having a sandwich, or they're reading their own book in the background somewhere or something, you know. But most of the time, that is probably, I would say, the rarest of them all is when you have an author that actually will transition and become an actor.
Well, we were talking about Stephen King and stuff he's done in front of the camera. Very, very entertaining. I think the guy's, whether it's the cocaine or what, but he's got kind of a goofy presence to him that I think works quite well. Then you have, I mean, Quentin Tarantino, I guess, is more on the filmmaking side, but I mean, he obviously likes to inject himself into his movies and showed in stuff like Reservoir Dogs that he's actually not really a bad actor.
Yeah, but so then he showed in Little Nicky. Yes, he is.
Some of them, as Cecil said, if they can, I mean, not necessarily even if they're good actors, but maybe just if they're, you know, have an entertaining sort of personality and presence, it can really work. But a lot of the time, yeah, it's just kind of stuff like Stan Lee showing up as like a little cameo. And I think either way, it's honestly
with Stan Lee, I thought he was really good in Mallrats as Stan Lee. I mean, he's essentially playing himself, but he had a long extended scene, and he was good.
He was really good.
Your friend is really obsessed with superhero genitalia.
But I just think it's, you know, like when you see Neil Gaiman or Frank Miller in RoboCop 2
mm-hmm.
as Frank the Chemist? He was actually pretty decent in that tiny little role. So I think non-actors can do the job. They also can be really bad. I have seen some, especially usually sports figures, they'll have a cameo in a movie and you go, wow, they they really just wanted to be able to put their name in the credits, didn't they? Because this guy's bad. I mean, hell, the WWE has a filmmaking division of their goddamn franchise where the whole thing is about making movies to star WWE. Hell, we talked about it on the Poltergeist retrospective. The fourth season of Poltergeist: The Legacy was a full-on crossover with the WWE to have them all playing escaped villains from hell. Star Trek Voyager had a whole season where almost all of the villains were played by WWE because UPN had them both. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
It really does depend. There's that, you know, that handful of dudes like The Rock, Roddy Piper. Hogan, Rock, Roddy Piper did really good. I mean, they just kind of went off on their own and decided to do movies. And now they're like, well, we can just manufacture them. Oh, no, you can't. Absolutely not. Sometimes it works with football players and wrestlers like Goldberg. Was a football player. Didn't work. But then you've also got guys like Bosworth and Lyle Elzado who are awesome.
Rosie Greer was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Like, it really depends. Sometimes it's not so much.
O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson. Hey, or good God, Brett Favre is so bad and there's something about Mary. Okay, I know it's a comedy, but his acting is so laughable on a level where you go, I don't think that was what they intended.
Yeah, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think it's really just when there's a standout individual who's just kind of different. He's cut from a different cloth, and it's sort of where you have an athlete who's really good at football, really good at wrestling or whatever, or really good musician, but they've also got this vibe where, hey, he easily could have been an actor too. And whereas some of them, or I'd say actually most of them, are really just, yeah, you're just an athlete. Keep your fucking mouth shut, please. Oh, and I gotta mention it just before, while we're still on the topic of athletes that are like, Terry Crews is easily one of the best examples of, like,
oh,
he's
He's the only reason Everybody Hates Chris was watchable.
Yeah, he is amazing and so underutilized that he could easily be like an action or a comedy star. Like, he's so goddamn good.
He almost makes me want to use Old Spice.
He's another one who just has this amazing charisma. He just is so goddamn likable. Like, everything I've seen him in, how can you not love him? Dude, his part in White Girls is the only reason to watch that pile of crap movie. President Camacho.
Yeah.
Mountain Dew Camacho, show respect.
Hold on.
Idiocracy.
Yes.
In Idiocracy. I'm looking for his full name. Oh, here we go. President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho.
Yeah.
Come on. Not sure. Get up wherever you is.
But it has electrolytes, what plants crave.
It's what plants crave.
You want us to put toilet water on our plants?
So we should drink, you mean from the toilet?
Why aren't we should actually be quoting Terry Crews here. Your head looked like a peanut. Let's get you sworn in.
Where can people find Potor the Rotor?
You can find me Potor Rotoring my ass off on YouTube. The Cinematicist on Twitter, at Cinematica on Facebook, The Cinematicist, and on 1201beyond.com, just pumping you full of electrolytes in the form of reviews of exploitation and stuff. It's what plants crave, and it's what you crave.
And Cecil is probably the not actorist of, the most not actor of all of us, but where can people find you?
Yeah, I will be not acting over at escapistmagazine.com. Goodbadflix.com, geekjuicemedia.com, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, life stuff. Yes.
Well, and see, I'm over at 1201beyond.com, where I'm acting like I know what the hell I'm doing, which I really don't. You can contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. And guys, go to the website, buy some t-shirts, click on some ads. AdamandEve.com, use the promo code DROME, get something to stick up your butt or something for you to stick up somebody else's butt or whatnot. Just because someone doesn't start out as an actor doesn't mean that they're not going to steal the damn movie from you.
This is what you want. This is what you get. This is what you want. This is what you get. This is what you want. This is what you get. This is what you want. This is what you get. This is what you want. This is what you get. This is what you want.
We'll be right back. what you want, this is what you get, this is what you want, this is what you get, this is what you want, this is what you get, this is what you want, this is what you get, this is what you want, this is what you get, this is what you want, this is what you get, this is what you want.
Radio Drone is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.